Today we hear from Pastor John Hine about the new C-13 project. No, that's not a new James Bond movie or Mission Impossible flick. That's a Christmas outreach program that you may want to get involved with, but you have to do it this week if you want to get involved. Sally has another DIY project you're not going to want to miss. Great listener feedback, some good tips and picks, all that and more. Don't go away. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, and I'm Martin Spriggs, in a show where we talk about technology and ministry. This is episode 309 for October 1st, 2013. We're in October, Sally.
Yeah, it's hard to believe this year is flying by, Martin. Before you know it, there'll be Christmas decorations everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm seeing all the Halloween stores go up now. I don't know if you have that around you, but they seem to spring up magically and disappear just as quickly.
Yep, 'tis the season, I guess. I'm more about pumpkins and fall leaves.
I am too, yeah. But we can't deny that this is a popular season. The colors are turning here. I'm sure they are up there as well. So just a beautiful time of year.
Yeah, definitely like the temperatures right now and wishing that they would hold on all through the winter months ahead. But I think I know what's in store for us.
It's been a great fall so far. Something new to us as well. We're using a little bit different technology here for our mind map. We made a switch, and I don't know about you, Sally, but I'm kind of liking MindMeister at this point. It provides good collaboration, which we didn't have with Mind Manager before, so we can both be in the map at the same time. Web-based, always on. I like it.
I like it too, and one thing I am learning more about is integrating it with Google Apps, and the fact that when you go to your Google Drive, you can add MindMeister as an option, and it'll store your files in your Google Drive and allow you to share them the way you can other Google Docs, and you know, be available for offline work as well. So
yeah, good stuff. We've only been doing it for a week, so the jury's still out, but early signs are positive. I know last week we told the class that we were going to be talking about mobile technology and specifically the Wells mobile app. We take that back. We're going to save that because we had the opportunity to insert a very timely topic, and that's marketing for special events. We've got Christmas coming up, and there is a program through one of our synodical organizations. And we're going to be interviewing John Hine a little bit later, who is the director of the Congregational Counseling Committee, the CCC, a brand new committee. And we thought it would be wise to kind of marry our conversation, our interview with him, with just a general conversation about marketing or promoting special events. We're coming into now the event season, the festival season of the church here. We have Reformation coming up, Thanksgiving, Advent, Christmas, all those things. So why not have a conversation about how a church or a school might think about looking at events and figuring out, how do I get the word out, both internally and externally?
Yeah, I think it's very important that you are strategic about those things. And I don't mean in a negative or manipulating kind of way, but that you take a stance of identifying who your audiences are for events and then figuring out ways to reach them with the information that they need to motivate them to participate in the events that you're planning. It's no fun to plan an event and have no one show up. And right, obviously, you have the ultimate reason to plan events and to want them to go well, and that is that you have very good news to share through Jesus Christ.
Yeah, when you think about it, there the church is all about events. There's an event every Sunday, for instance. There's an event throughout the seasons of the church years. We talked about Advent, Christmas, you know, Holy Week, Mission Festival. But when you think about maybe pastors who do sermon series, or school events or VBS or Happy Birthday Jesus at Christmas time or Bible class kickoff. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can choose to promote, to market, so to speak, to different audiences. And you mentioned, Sally, it's important to kind of figure out who that audience is and then identify the different tools and channels that you're going to use to get the word out to them and encourage them, not just to come and participate, but maybe to be a part of the planning process and the doing of the event, the running, the organizing of the event. And that's a big job to try and figure out how best to get that word out. One thing that I've suggested in some of the writings that I've done on this topic is establish a group of people, what I sometimes call the communications committee, that is really responsible for that. I think too often we equate promoting and marketing with the outreach committee, the evangelism committee, because we think maybe they're the only ones that really need to do that, you know, hang the door bag hangers and, you know, get the word out on the street, you know, put the radio spots on the radio or billboards or yard signs, whatever. But I think every group within the church has communication needs, and they have a potential use for a communications committee.
Yeah, I was thinking, Martin, longtime listeners will recognize that as kind of a recurring theme. So a tech and ministry podcast, you'd think we'd be talking about, tools and gadgety things.
We'll get there.
But instead, yeah, we got to back up from there, and we got to start with the core group, the communications committee, that looks at all the events going on and figures out the best way to get the word out, like you said, internally and externally. And, you know, to set goals or know what you want people to respond with. You know, if you want them to walk away with certain things from your event, if you want internal people to volunteer, whatever those goals are, right. Yeah. You know, the communication committee is a great place to start with setting all that up.
Yeah, marketing 101 kind of stuff. And, you know, we're using marketing, obviously. We are not diminishing, obviously, the role of the Holy Spirit and how God works through His Word. But He's given us some of these tools to use. And in marketing, there's that call to action and that intended result. What do you want to have happen as a result of this event? You don't just have an event just to have it. There needs to be an intended result. And what does success look like? If God really blessed what you're doing, what would that look like? So you need to kind of have that in mind as you're planning the event and certainly as you're promoting the event, because that will flavor how you approach it. And I think some of the same things that you see on TV and you see in your mailbox and you see, you know, you hear on radio, you know, these themes, you know, develop themes and memorable things that will resonate with your audience that they'll remember. Using imagery, keep it short and sweet, memorable, so that, you know, it sticks in their mind and they can remember it easily and they're encouraged to maybe check it out. Maybe you have a tease or something that sends them to another location, maybe your website where they can get more information.
Yeah, I like the idea of using imagery and also having different flavors of the imagery with the theme embedded or whatever. I'm remembering our school anniversary that we did a few years ago at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, and we came up with imagery and a theme. We used it on a special bulletin cover. We used it to create banners. We used it on the website, you know, so there was consistency with all of our communication around that special event in print, on the web, in everything that we did.
Yep. That's where that communications committee, especially if you have a good one, can really come in handy and be a blessing to the efforts, because maybe they are attuned, maybe there's people on that committee who have this in their background or have a passion for this and are really looking for opportunities and figuring out the best channels and making that communication cohesive. I think probably the biggest encouragement that I could provide to any group trying to market or promote an event is allow enough time to plan. Spend that time early on. You know, so don't get to the end of November and figure we got to now promote, you know, our Christmas events. Mm-hmm. This summer is a great time for that. Give a 6 to 12 month lead time for that. Gather the people, create the excitement, give the ideas time to what I would call percolate. You know, so you've got, you know, you can sit on it, you can think about it, you can massage it, it can get better over time. And then document that, you know, for this event, and then put your timelines and responsibilities together and milestones, and then have regular check-ins for the people involved, so you keep, so that that project doesn't get stuck. So it just doesn't sit there on the back burner until it's too late to actually do some real meaningful promotion.
I'm just feeling relaxed as you describe all that, Martin, because that's what it gives you, is a little bit of relaxation around big events that sometimes can be just super stressful. But if you're thinking about it and you're visualizing it and you're planning for it 6 to 12 months in advance, and obviously that's at the same time that other events are going on live, you know, so you've backed up the calendar and you're planning this in the summer, you're in the middle of VBS when you're planning for Christmas. But VBS will have been planned 6 months before, so it all works out. I just think it's a lot better for your peace of mind to have a long-range planning goal
if
like
you're
that.
Planning for Thanksgiving right now, you're behind the eight ball already.
Definitely.
Because you're in the midst of school. There's all kinds of activities. There's sports. There's, you know, Reformation, et cetera. So it's you know, you can't be too early. So
one thing I would throw into the mix is using the web to your advantage. So if you are planning, perhaps dedicate a wiki page or a Google site is a great place to do this, because you can easily share with others a Google site. And so as you're making those milestone plans and things, documenting them on a website that you can easily come back to and share with others, private, so the world's not seeing your planning, but sharing with the group that's doing the planning.
Absolutely. So there's all kinds of promotional activities that you could wrap around some of these things. We've talked about a lot of these things in the past, you know, a dedicated website or blog, you know, the social networking, you know, the Twitter and the Twitter things that you can do. And there are a bunch of Twitter strategies out there now about how you can best use that tool. There's Facebook campaigns that you could use depending on whether your congregation or school is involved with those social media activities. There's surveys, pre-event surveys, questionnaires. Sally, one thing that we've seen grow a little bit is QR codes. There's lots of different ways that you can use that, especially if you have a group, your target audience is maybe smartphone users. And then certainly don't underestimate the power of prayer, requesting prayers for the people who are working on the project, the people who may attend, and the effort in general, that God would bless your activities and your work and show you what direction you should be going.
That's so true, Martin. One more thing to add to that group of ideas and activities to do in promotion is to use volunteers, perhaps with Volunteer Spot. I just got an email yesterday from my son's high school, and they use Volunteer Spot, which is a free website that you can use to organize volunteers around an event. So, you know, if you have that lead time and you've given some thought to the different areas where it would be helpful for people to serve, you can certainly build that into your promotional activities as well. And if you want to volunteer, hop over to this link on Volunteer Spot and you'll see all the opportunities to help with the event.
It's another reason to start early. I think it's easier to engage volunteers if you give them a little bit of lead time, so you're not asking them at the last minute, hey, we need help, come on over. I mean, there's always going to be that. There's always some advantage to that sense of urgency. But if you can give somebody, and I know I'm like that, if you can give me 3 months, you know, lead time, I can probably carve out some time in the schedule to make that happen and commit to that. But if you give me 2 weeks, chances are less likely that I'm going to be available. So, sure. Sally, we should probably close this part of our conversation with just a reminder that you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. There are lots of examples out there for different events. There's images, there's graphics, there's tools, there's all kinds of people in all kinds of ministry situations that are doing similar things. So if you're looking for let's say, sermon series images. You're looking for VBS promotional graphics. You're looking for Sunday school kickoff stuff. There's stuff out there, and usually at a very inexpensive price. There's a lot of websites that you can go to, and we've featured some in the past, and we'll put those on the show notes page, which is, Sally, a nice lead-in to our interview. And that's John Hine. And we are crossing our fingers at this point that he has resolved his internet connectivity issues, and we're actually going to have an interview. If not, there'll be a big blank spot here in the podcast, and you won't be hearing John. But we're going to make every effort to make that happen today. But he's going to be talking about one of those promotional resources, C13, Christmas 13, activities and materials that you can use to encourage people to come to your church this Christmas out of the CCC. So they call it C13. And let's hear John and that wonderful ministry that's going to be coming out of CCC and C13. We'd like to welcome today Pastor Jonathan Hine from beautiful Savior Lutheran Church in Somerville, South Carolina, also the freshly minted director of Congregational Counseling Committee. Hi, John. How are you?
Great. Yourself?
Very good. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Maybe just take a minute to introduce yourself, where you serve, and the number of different roles you have, especially as the CCC director.
My name is John Hine. I serve in beautiful Savior, Somerville, South Carolina. Been here, my entire ministry was assigned here in 1997 as a missionary start. And more recently, I accepted a two-year call to set up just what you said, a new division in the Wells Congregation and Ministry Support Group. It's known as Commission for Congregational Counseling. Which is really tasked to help churches assess their ministry and adjust it appropriately in an effort to achieve a greater level of congregational health.
What's your balance then? Do you percentage-wise, what do you spend for what?
It's about two-thirds of my time is spent working for the Synod, and a third of the time spent working for my congregation. Much like district presidents, I was assigned a graduate assistant this year. Great young man, my associate Kyle Burmeister, who then kind of takes a lot of work off me at the church, so I can serve my synod.
Awesome, and I'm glad the synod is recognizing that, you know, this can't be done on a shoestring, and that you need assistance to be able to do this. So, you know, I know a lot of our listeners and viewers are probably familiar with the old parish services. How is CCC different than parish services?
Well, where it would be similar is that both of the agencies were looked at tasking at congregational health. I guess some differences might be, one is we really try and stress that it's self-assessment. And so what we just do is we will come into for example, come into a congregation on a Saturday and just lead them through about four and a half hours of Bible study. With the goal of that study of the scriptures and the Lutheran confessions, to be to answer this question, in various areas of ministry, based on scriptures, what would your church have to do to be healthy? And so we look at things like worship, outreach, adult discipleship, youth ministry, and look at what scripture has to say about those things. And then the people themselves say we would have to be healthy in, to be healthy, we would have to do A, B, and C when it comes to worship. We'd have to do A, B, C, D when it comes to outreach. And then really where the CCC kicks in then is on Sunday when we come back with that list and say, okay, of those things which you said, what are you currently doing? What are you doing but you would like to do a little better? And what is not being done? And then we get the help, the resources that are available.
Sure.
So really, that would be one thrust of the CCC is that it's self-assessment. It's once they've done that, congregations have often asked, "Now what?" and not known where to go. Mm-hmm. And that's the hole that the CCC is trying to fill. is that we'll have all these resources available, and we'll eventually be talking about C-13 as an example, that helps churches adjust their ministry in ways that makes an immediate impact on their ability to share the gospel.
So when you say CCC, who is we? Is there a series of consultants that you have, or what's the model here, and what's the timeline?
There's a commission, and the commission has been around for a little over 3 years. We've been doing work, but now with my calling as a director, it's 2 years to train 60 consultants. So the goal of this first year is to finalize the program. There's a number of aspects that I won't go into all the details, but you can find a summary on Wells Connect on the website of our programs. One, for example, is we call it the SAA, the Self-Analysis and Adjustment Program, which I just described. And so it's to finalize those programs, to get them, to test them in a couple of places, get it exactly as we want it.
Yep.
And then in between those 2 years, so this summer, I'll be looking at training those 60 men, pastors from around the Wells, to use the programs that we've created. And then the second half of the year, they'll be going out and doing that. Our goal would be that they could work with probably on average 2 congregations each. So you're talking 120 congregations in a year. So over the subsequent years, they'll be able to get into a lot of congregations and hopefully help them make their ministry as efficient as possible.
Awesome.
You mentioned C-13 earlier. Our focus in our discussion time was on promoting special events. And with Christmas coming up, you guys have a package of material you've put together specifically focused on promoting Christmas activities in the congregation. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, C-13, it's a follow-up to, we did E-12, Easter 2012, and C-13 is very similar. It's produced by the entire Congregation Ministry Support Group, so all the divisions. It's being coordinated through the Commission for Congregational Counseling, but all the divisions, ultimately, they're working on various, we call them modules. So there's a worship planning module, an outreach planning module, one for the school, even things for special ministries. The goal is to create some synergy in what a congregation plans to do. What I've found, is in the case of many churches, is worship plans by themselves, outreach kind of plans by themselves, and there's sometimes a duplication of efforts, lack of communication. The C-13 model is meant to illustrate how you can plan all that together and really make good use of all the resources that your church has to offer the community. And so, as you said, a big part of it is just focusing then on Christmas Eve, which is, there's 2 big times when prospects will come to church. One is Easter Sunday. The other is Christmas Eve. So what does that mean for a church? What would they do? How do they train their members to invite friends? How do they utilize the school? Because obviously, in a lot of our churches, Christmas Eve is a big thing for the school. That school event can still be used for outreach, the children's service. So C-13 is just a planning program that helps congregations wrestle with all these questions, and it provides a ton of just practical nuts and bolts resources. For example, there's worship folder templates, so churches don't have to produce their own worship folders. They can just take our templates, we have them in Microsoft Word, Microsoft Publisher, edit them as they see fit, and use them. There's worship suggestions for choir with links to where you can get the music. There's been a postcard that's been produced that you can order. It's been subsidized by a grant, so they're really affordable. So a church that would want to even just do it like 1,000 postcards and maybe hand them out door to door to the homes around them, those 1,000 postcards would be free. So it's not only illustrating how to plan all ministry together, but it's giving a lot of practical nuts and bolts resources so that they can promote this great important event, the Nativity of our Lord, and their community, and invite them to come and have an opportunity to hear the gospel on Christmas Eve.
Nice. So a lot of our viewers, listeners are interested in the technology side of this. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot on the show about social networks and the digital tools available. Resources in that area for those people interested in expanding their social ministry to take advantage of C13, is there stuff there for them? Or does CCC have stuff, you know, down the road for those congregations that are using Twitter and Facebook, those kinds of things?
Well, both. We'll have licensed images that connect with C13 that people can use on their website and on their Facebook page, their church Facebook page. I think that's absolutely important. You know, I'm not by any means an expert. I believe it would be called branding. That with all, you know, whenever someone hears about your Christmas Eve service, they see an image, that image is consistent. You know, so we'll provide digital images that people then can use, like I said, both on their webpage and on Facebook. When it comes to down the road, you know, certainly, well, part of it is CCC's job, we see, is to let Wells people know of the other divisions that exist. I don't want to do anyone else's work. I don't want to do your work, Martin. You know your work better than I do. I'm more of a Luddite when it comes to technology. But to let them, you know, to let churches know when we're counseling with the church, and I'm shocked by the number of Wells churches that don't have a website.
Right.
Or if they have a website, it's just
what shape it's in.
It's not in good shape, and just to let them know then about your division, as far as the way the CCC is using technology, a big part of the job that we've been tasked with is to help churches, to help pastors with the time-consuming task of leadership training. So we are developing in this first year something that's called CST, Congregational Servant Training, which is an online curricula for all sorts of different types of church leaders. The first component we'd like to roll out within the next 6 months is elder training. You just look at the number of churches that have high levels of inactives, and it's just because they're lacking in the number of elders that they have, and it's time consuming to train elders. So the CST would be a program where pastors can go and register, log in. It'd be completely free. And then they can sign up spiritual men in their church to go through this program. And much like a regular online program, it would give feedback to the pastor so that he knows how his people are progressing through it. And elder training is just the tip of the iceberg. Church council training. I know the Commission on Evangelists is doing something personal evangelism training. So I can see there being about close to two dozen different training programs that'll be available online, which finally, that's the way people are learning today, is taking classes online.
Cool. So maybe to wrap things up, we want to make sure people know how to get involved with the C13 program specifically, because I understand there's a pretty tight deadline to get signed up.
Yes, there is. www.c13wells.com is a website that just takes you right to a registration page. All you do is you put in your name, your email address, and whether you're a pastor, teacher, layman. So it's real simple. That'll stay open until this Friday at midnight. That link goes inactive. However, if someone would either email me, or you could still go to c13wells@gmail.com. They could send me an email and we could add them after the deadline. I'd like to get as many people registered as possible, because already Saturday, the first materials and the first devotional encouragements start to roll out this coming Saturday. That'd be October 5th, I believe. So if they could go to c13wells.com and register by this Friday, that'd be fantastic.
Is there any cost for those that want to be a part of it?
None. No, we're really trying in the Commission on Congregational Counseling to make things just as affordable as possible. So much of the resources are absolutely free. The worship templates, for example, are free. Obviously, you want to order postcards. There's going to be some cost, but like I said, we've subsidized them. So I think the first 1,000 cards are free. Things like in the worship folders, if you want to use certain pieces of music, which we recommended, we've provided links where you can go to the publishers to purchase those, but you'd have to, you know, pay the $2 for the music and make sure you have the license allowed to use it. But participate participation in the program itself is absolutely free. It's not just leadership materials, but there's a lot of devotional materials that will come out, especially as we get into Advent. We'll be offering devotions, weekly devotions, well, really daily devotions for families to use at home based on the lessons from the previous Sunday. So just because I think that all goes hand in hand. The spiritual maturity of our people goes with congregational health and congregational leadership. So that's coming out of adult discipleship. So it's really just a great program provided by the entire Congregation Ministry Support Group, and I hope people can participate.
Awesome. That's c13wells.com if you're interested, and do it by Friday. Yep. Thanks, John. Appreciate the update on CCC. We'll loop back with you in a little bit to see how C13 went and some progress on your commission's work. Really exciting stuff, and certainly we pray that it's a blessing to the Synod. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Been a pleasure.
Yep.
So Martin, we'll make sure and include in the show notes links to where you can get registered for C13. The registration deadline is actually today, October 1st. So if you're interested in participating, rush on over and get registered for C13. And you will be receiving links and things to resources posted on the Connect website with the theme and all the different materials that are being prepared for that marketing opportunity.
Great. All right, shall we move along to ministry resources? And this is kind of along the same lines, right, Sally?
That's correct. We just wanted to draw your attention to several media websites, starting with Muddy River Media, that have media that you can use in marketing type campaigns or in worship settings or whatever it may be. And again, they have things around themes, so it's not just one piece of media that you might be interested in, but several around particular themes. I started with Muddy River Media. It's muddyrivermedia.org because the content on Muddy River is free, actually. You do have to create an account to be able to download from the site, but yeah, they make their content available for free. And so you can even browse by Bible verse. Like I said, they have things by theme. So if you're looking for Christmas resources, you can find that here. Or you can, like I said, browse by Bible verse, select a book of the Bible and drill down to a particular verse and see what resources they have by verse as well. They offer all different types of media, backgrounds and video loop, illustrative media, they have still imagery, all different kinds of things. And in parallel, there's also centerlinenewmedia.com, which has very similar setup, although it's all fee-based. And then finally, worshiphousemedia.com, again, with very similar setup where you can search by themes and background images and things like that. So
yep. A lot of stuff for screens. So if you use screens in your church, either in the sanctuary or in the, the narthex or whatever, there's lots of good things that can spruce that up as well. So, mm-hmm. All right, Sally, we are at the point where we are going to go to our review section, and let me do a quick screen share here. And it's going to be my review this week. And just a reminder that if you want to do a review of any kind, and it can be written, it can be something that you post on YouTube, it can be some kind of hardware device, it can be a software package, it can be a website, doesn't really matter. Reviews are what we're looking for in this category, and we're going to put together a list of those people who have submitted reviews over the year and offer some kind of fabulous prize at the end of the process here. My review is on my phone, which is a newer offering from Motorola called the Moto X. And I'm not going to go through point by point my review. It's on my blog site, martinspriggs.com. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But in general, those of you that are maybe looking for a phone, and this is available on all the carriers, The Moto X is an Android-based phone, and it's actually the best Android phone that I have owned to date, but mostly for two reasons. One, battery life. I can get, you know, a day and a half out of this phone, which is really important to me, especially since it's not a removable battery. And secondly, it's got a neat feature where it is essentially always listening to you. So it's listening for you to make it to bring it to life, so to speak. So if you say, okay, Google Now, it begins to listen to your commands. So I can make phone calls, I can do text messages, I can tell it to navigate to certain locations, all without having to touch the phone. Now, that's the only phone that I'm aware of that actually does that. And it does it without really sacrificing battery life. You'd think that a phone that's always listening would really drain the battery, but they've got this new chipset and architecture that works really well together, and very impressed with this phone. So if you are in the market for a phone, you may want to check out my review on the Moto X from Motorola.
So, Martin, I'm just curious, how many phones have you owned in your day? How many cell phones?
I have no idea.
Because we can trust this review because you've definitely got some experience in this category.
I do. And I've owned three of the four platforms. It's been a long time since I've owned an iPhone. iPhone 4 was my last iPhone, and that was, I don't know, 3 years ago maybe now. That's... Well, we're on the 5S, so that's the 4, the 4S, the 5, the 5S. So I'm four generations behind there, although my family's all on iPhones. And I have owned a Windows phone, mostly because I need to test the Wells mobile app. So I haven't used that full time. But mostly I've been using Android phones. So the last phone I had was the Galaxy S3. And that was a good phone, but the battery life was just horrendous on that. So this one I'm really enjoying. So I'd have to go back, and I don't know if I could do that even, count them all. So
my husband just got a Galaxy S4, yep. And it has facial recognition. Do you have that on your Moto?
No, I don't. Does he use it?
Yeah, he's been using it. It's pretty cool. We all tried to break in, and it won't let us pass. It has to be him. And so no passcode. He just looks at it nicely.
It's interesting. Samsung is doing really well, you know, in the phone market. But you don't really see that here in the U.S. as much as you see it in Asia. So when I've been over to Hong Kong and ride the subway over there, you see almost no iPhones. It's all these Galaxy phones, and usually the Note 2 or 3, these big things that that people are using, and they're all looking at them on the, you know, everybody's got one, you know, on the subway, and they're all looking at them, and they're all you know, either Samsung or Sony or HTC, which I guess makes sense. Those are, you know, at least HTC and Samsung are Asian company, so the iPhone isn't as strong over there. But I think we sometimes think, well, iPhone or Apple owns the world, and they really don't. They're certainly, I think, very much more prominent here in the U.S., but not as much internationally. So it's interesting.
Very good. Well, thanks for being our cell phone expert.
Yeah. Should we move on to our tips?
Yep.
Of the week, a brand new segment, or fairly new segment now, and I'll jump right in. And again, let me share my screen, and let's go here. And my tip of the week is all about a topic that is not very glamorous, but very important for all of us, and that is how to choose, buy, and safely use a good surge protector. We all buy them. We all use them. I think we all figure that they're good things to have, if nothing more for their utility of being able to plug more than one plug into your outlet. But they actually serve a very good purpose. So I stumbled across an article from Lifehacker with that same name. And they do a nice walkthrough of the important things to consider when you're looking at buying a surge protector. And they talk about the difference between a power strip and a surge protector. There's a big difference. A power strip simply is something that allows you to plug in more things to the same power source. A surge protector gives you that plus the ability to protect your equipment in case there is some kind of power surge. And they talk about a number of the things that you should consider, you know, the first of which is obviously pick one that you're going to not have to grow out of. So you want to buy one with the right number of ports. One of the things they advise against, which I see all the time, or used to see in our old building, and I've seen in a number of homes, is surge protectors plugged into surge protectors. You know, to give you more plugs. They say that that is a very bad idea. That actually defeats the purpose and reduces their effectiveness. One other thing that I think was great advice is check the warranty. Part of the reason that you buy a surge protector is that if something bad does happen to your equipment, your computer, your stereo, your TV, that there is some recourse. And a lot of the higher end surge protectors do have a warranty that will pay you some money if their surge protector does not protect. That's part of their warranty. So make sure you're buying one that covers what you think it should cover, and then save that warranty information. That's part of the problem with warranties. Sometimes you get something that has a warranty and then you forget to send it in, or you don't know what its terms are or when it expires. I'm going to talk in my picks of the week about a good way or good place to save those warranties so that you always have them in case you need them. So take a look at this article. That is my tip of the week. Don't neglect your practice good surge protection. Let's put it that way.
Good tip. And I bet there's probably times when we'd wish we'd pay attention. So, you know, stop now, folks, and pay attention to Martin so that it doesn't burn you later.
Huh? That's right. It's kind of like backup. You know, everybody knows they should do it, but they don't always do it until it's too late.
Right.
Sal, you have a tip?
I do. I'm going to take you over to my favorite site, Martin. We're going to look at Pinterest today.
I think you got a little DIY project.
Yep, but before we get to that, I wanted to just give you some general tips about using Pinterest. I think everybody gets it that Pinterest is a cool site to look at, and you can scroll down and find things you like the, you know, most gorgeous food, or perhaps you love this idea for a photo of your classroom with your students' hands making a circle. When you hover over an item on Pinterest, you can click the pin it. You can choose a board to add it to, like, photography ideas or whatever it may be. And you can add those things to your board so that you can find them again in the future. You can go browse all your good stuff that you've saved on your boards. Once I understood the concept of pinning things, then I began to look for people to follow, because as I followed people, my homepage would be full of the things they were pinning, which is nice to be able to just browse and see good stuff. Then I wanted more. I wanted to be able to see more good stuff, not just what's coming up on my homepage from the people I follow. So I started using this driver icon here in the upper left. And what you get is access to things like the most popular things on Pinterest, or things organized by different categories. So a lot of times I'll click into, and I didn't mean to click that category, I'll click into do-it-yourself and crafts, and I'll just, you know, see ideas for crafts I may want to make, and I'll pin them, just anything that I like here. And for a long time, that's pretty much how I use Pinterest. I either looked at my front page, or I looked at the do-it-yourself and crafts page, and that maybe there's a technology page.
There's a geek one I saw.
You know, so there are a few that are of interest. I was thinking more about photography, I might look at the photography page and see ideas there for photography or whatever. But recently, I've kind of unlocked Pinterest a lot more for myself by starting to use the search. And so, for example, I might search on Chromebooks, and all of a sudden, I get a whole page full of things just link to articles and ideas for Chromebooks. And that's really cool to be able to narrow down and just look at a particular item. And, you know, so far, everything I wanted to search on, from basement remodels to, you know, whatever it may be, I can find things on Pinterest by using the search. What I realized, though, was I was coming up with particular pins. People had pinned things with the word Chromebook in them. But when I used this toggle here to switch to boards, I could see people's Pinterest boards just about Chromebooks. And so here someone's curating a whole board that's about Chromebooks. She has 273 followers of this board. So it must be some good stuff here dedicated to Chromebooks. So I can easily begin to follow her board and have all of her Chromebook pins coming into my feed on my homepage. I thought I'd show you a couple of other searches, if I can type on my keyboard. Like, for instance, if you're interested in seventh grade science, you could search on that. And because I was on boards, it comes up with people that have dedicated boards just to seventh grade science. And this could be any subject level, any grade level, any subject. You can find the particular pins, but what I get really excited about is when I switch to boards and I'm able to just start following whole boards of curated information on the topic. One more that I did for an example was church newsletter templates. And this one, I think I didn't find boards, but when I switched to pins, I found a lot of different ideas for church newsletters.
Awesome. What a great resource.
Yeah. Pinterest becomes a lot more valuable when you look for things that you're interested in, not just waiting for people to bring you good stuff,
but like actually an RSS start reader. Using. Right.
And so that's my tip of the week, is just how to kind of narrow your searching in Pinterest and also look for the, not just the pins, but the boards and maybe even specific pinners that are pinning on something. My pick of the week is also Pinterest related. So let's see, I have a tab open. Sunday morning early, I was looking at Pinterest and lo and behold, there was this picture of a laptop stand. And it was made out of PVC pipe. If you can see the diagram on the video screen, there's two short ones and three longer ones plus six elbow joints. I actually bought a couple of extras. Headed over to my local Menards Sunday afternoon, and about $6.25 later, I'm actually using a PVC pipe laptop stand to record our podcast today. And I'll have to post a link of my very own that I made, but it looks very much like this. This Pinterest image didn't have any measurements or anything. I just looked at the pictures, went and bought the stuff, and boom, I have a laptop stand. Okay. And I was excited about that. So Pinterest does pay off, Martin. That's your tip and pick of the day.
Cool. What color is yours? Did you paint yours?
I didn't. It's a lovely white.
PVC white.
Yeah.
Very stylish these days.
That's right. I don't see much of it, though. It's all behind my laptop, so it really doesn't matter.
That's cool. And it works.
It does. It works great.
So did you use joint compound, or is it just a loose fit?
It's no joint compound required. They fit pretty snugly, actually.
No kidding.
By the right
pieces. Portable. You could take it wherever.
That's right. I might bring it with me to Milwaukee and make use of it there. Who knows?
That's awesome. DIY household there.
That's right.
I think that's great, Sally. My pick, and I'm going to share my screen again, is actually kind of a double pick. It is Evernote and Penultimate. They actually are two different products, but now they're both under the Evernote umbrella. Let me start with Evernote. Evernote is really a cross-platform note-taking app. We've talked about it in the past, and I know a lot of our listeners are Evernote users, so there's nothing new there. For those of you that don't know what Evernote is, it's really, it works on iPad, iPhone, Mac, Windows, web, whatever platform you're on, and you need to take notes. There are some benefits to using it on mobile. You can obviously take pictures and include those in Evernote. So whenever I'm on the road or parking in a airport parking lot, whatever, I'll take a picture of, you know, my location. I'll plug that into Evernote, give it a tag or title, and I'm good. You can take pictures of documents, receipts. It will OCR those results so that you can search on the text in those pictures. It provides tagging, folders, a couple new things. They just had a conference, so they rolled out a lot of different stuff. We're going to talk about one of those that came up in our community feedback. But a couple of the new things are reminders, so that you can now use it as your productivity tool as far as jotting things down and putting reminders, so it'll email you with a reminder or pop it up when you have the client open. They just came out with an iOS 7 version. They now offer speech to text, so it will you can speak into it, and it'll obviously record or attempt to record in text what you spoke. One of the neatest features that I know that teachers use a lot is the Web Clipper. It's a little plugin. I believe it's available for Firefox, Chrome, and Safari. It must be available for Internet Explorer as well. I haven't tried it there. Basically, you can capture any portion of your screen. So you just click the Web Clipper button, and it will try and figure out what it exactly is that you want to clip into Evernote, and then it'll create a picture of it and carry that into Evernote, and then a link back to the web page. So it's a great way to collect resources, kind of a hard-coded Digo experience. So it's I think it's not a competitor, but it provides some similar functionality. So that's the Evernote side. One of the neat things, though, is it's got all these add-on things. And one of the things that they've added on and ultimately purchased was this product called Penultimate. And that is an iPad app for taking notes freehand with a stylus, so to speak. You could use your finger, but I'd recommend a stylus. It's integrated with Evernote. It offers now handwriting recognition. And when you take it's basically a blank page that you can use to write your notes on. So you jot down your notes, and it's immediately captured into Evernote, which is cloud-based or locally based. It'll do both. And then you can search those notes for things that you wrote as, you know, the handwriting recognition goes ahead and indexes it. One of the neat things about Penultimate, it is very simple to use. So it's a very straightforward, just screen-based tablet, or not screen-based, but notepad-based concept where you turn pages and you can insert pictures or draw or whatever. It's just kind of a nicely integrated tool with Evernote, and then it automatically syncs. So it's that tool is actually free. Evernote is free. There is a premium version, I think, for $49 a year, something like that, which gives you more storage on Evernote and a few of the additional features. I think PDF uploads and OCR on those. So it's really, I use it mostly for personal stuff, but because we use Microsoft, you know, OneNote for our office stuff. But all my receipts, all the stuff that I collect over time that I don't want to, you know, put in file folders, all goes into Evernote with either scanning it in or taking a picture of it, or just tossing it in right from the web.
You know, I'm never short of amazement at Evernote. I think they're kind of parallel to Google, and that Google wants you to be able to search anything. Evernote wants you to be able to store everything, and they just give you so many different ways. It's almost overwhelming.
It is, right?
All that you can do with the tool. And for that reason, I haven't been a true adopter yet. I still, it's on my list, but I'm not quite there with Evernote because I'm overwhelmed by it so much.
There's a whole growing segment in the educational area of using Evernote in the classroom, and there's Evernote for Education, all kinds of tools there as well that you get the kids involved, and you have shared notebooks and the like. So it's a very collaborative space as well. Sally, let's move on to our of interest section.
Sure. Just a quick mention that this Saturday, October 5th, is the Ladies Auxiliary meeting at MLC. And the reason this one's on my radar in particular is because I'm going to be leading one of the breakout sessions in the afternoon called Staying Connected with Technology. So ideas for using the web to connect, for video chatting, for photo sharing, and all those things. And we're going to talk a lot about privacy in that session, because I think that's one thing that people are concerned about and should be concerned about, is keeping their information private, even though you're connected. So join me on Saturday at Martin Luther College.
Very good. Let's move on to community feedback.
Yeah, a good bit of community feedback to make our way through. First of all, through the listserv, a recommendation for Make Use Of and their regular e-newsletters that they put out. Mr. Norbert Langbecker wrote to us via the listserv, and he said he subscribed and unsubscribed to many tech newsletters. However, this is the only one I read every day. Their content is always fresh and useful. Check out their website and see if their newsletter would be useful to you too. And I'm a subscriber, Norbert. I totally agree with you. I do enjoy the Make Use Of resources. I think Pastor Rob Gunther maybe mentioned this on the podcast a year or two ago, and I've been subscribing since then. Good stuff. Awesome. There. Also, via the listserv, there was some questions about free stock image sites, and I have a long list of sites to post in our show notes for free stock imagery, including the Wells Streams imagery that's available, and new desktop calendars are available for October, so go grab those from the Wells Streams area. There's other sites like Stock Exchange and Morgue Files, which have free stock imagery, and like I said, we'll have links to lots more in the show notes. And then finally, Mr. Langbecker posted a link in the listserv to Crosswalk in Phoenix. Crosswalk Lutheran Church in Phoenix has sermon resources online. And here's an example of one. I thought this was a really neat concept. So as the pastor there, Jeff Gunn, is preparing a sermon, apparently he gives the congregation a little bit of guidance in following his sermon, a note-taking tool that's available to them to draw out some of the main points of the sermon that he's presenting. I thought this was a good example, and so did Mr. Langbecker, and wanted to share it with the Wells Tech community. Via DIGO, we learned about do-it-yourself badges from Connected Learning. A lot of education is going to more gamification. So if you complete a task, you earn a badge. And apparently, this is some information on creating badges. I think it was Gail Potratz who said she may be looking into this for her classroom. Jason Schmidt shared a link to how to install Linux on a Chromebook and unlock its full potential. And Gail also shared a link about, and I'm not sure I have it open here, but about using Evernote and Post-it notes, Martin.
Yeah.
Another announcement that came from them.
Yeah, that, let me see if I can find that here. There is a whole new segment. Let me share my screen real quickly here. Here it is. They've forged a partnership with the Post-it note people. Isn't that 3M? Or yeah, I think
sure.
It's 3M. That now you can take pictures of Post-it notes with your Evernote app, and the four primary Post-it note colors: the yellow, the green, the pink, and the blue. I don't know if those are the actual colors that they call them, but. Evernote will recognize the color and categorize them for you. So it's smart enough to recognize the color. And if you use some kind of system that says, well, green is for this and yellow is for that, and they make some recommendations on that, it's great for brainstorming. And then it will scan it, put it into your Evernote system, automatically tag it with the appropriate tag. Let's say it's, meeting note or a task. So maybe use yellow notes for tasks and blue for messages and whatever. So now 3M has created some nice little trays, so to speak, that you can stack or put together and use in conjunction with the Evernote app. So it's kind of cool. This whole marketing side of Evernote is just exploding right now. They've got things like Evernote socks and backpacks and styluses and just all over the place with what they've got in their market, because they're trying to kind of create a, build themselves as kind of a lifestyle company. So you've got, you know, the t-shirts and the scanners and the iPad holders and the wallets and so on and so forth. So take a look if you're an Evernote fan.
All right. Continuing with the Digo links, we had a new person post on our Digo list, Jason Winget, who we met at Wells Tech Camp a few weeks ago, has added to our Digo list. I'm really excited about that. If you have links to share, that's a great way to do it. Just head on over there and become a member of our Wells Tech group on Digo. Jason shared a link to some videos about RunRev, which apparently is open source programming, and there's some videos and things I'll link to in the show notes showing how simple it is and what a great programming language it is to teach students programming, that kind of thing. And then finally, a link that I shared again via Pinterest was to the Sony QX10 and QX100 smart lens. These are going to be.
I saw that before. Boy, is that thing, that's huge.
Well, it's not really necessary to attach it to your phone, though. What's cool about this is that's just a convenience thing. This is a completely wireless lens. So if you can see my screen, there's a girl holding her phone and the lens off to the side. You can have the lens wherever you want it. It communicates wirelessly with your phone or iPad, whatever it may be. And it's like a DSLR lens. So you get, you know, some amazing zooming capabilities and all of that, all with a wireless lens.
So is your viewfinder on the phone yet?
No, the viewfinder is in your hand when you're holding this lens.
Okay.
And you can just see the results on your phone. So your phone sees what the lens sees. It's like you're looking at your camera screen by looking at your phone. So just really amazing stuff. The lenses start at $250 and go up to $500 depending on the zoom capabilities and stuff. But I just was excited by the wireless functionality built into the lens. So it's like the lens is a computer, basically.
Yeah, not a cheap thing, but maybe has some usefulness for different situations.
So,
but it's a preview of things to come, I'm sure.
Exactly. So, Okay. Yeah, that's it for community feedback for this week.
All right, what are we doing next week, Sally?
Next week, we return to our book. It's called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Your Brain. And we're going to find out if you have a concrete head or not, Martin, because that's apparently what people thought your brain used to be, pretty set in stone. Current research is showing something a little bit different, and it's an interesting read. So chapter 2, if you're reading along with us.
Some have claimed I have rocks for brains, so we'll see you next week.
Truth will come out next week.
Okay. Let's close the show with the music of In His Service, their song, Jesus, Lover of My Soul. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.